Chapter 2 of Henry Ford's Own Story. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. Recording by Leanne Howlett. Henry Ford's Own Story by Rose Wilder Lane. Chapter 2, Mending a Watch. This first memorable event of Henry Ford's childhood occurred on a Sunday in the spring of his 11th year. In that well-regulated household, Sunday, as a matter of course, was a day of stiffly starched, dressed-up propriety for the children, and of custom-enforced idleness for the elders. In the morning, the fat driving horses, brushed till their glossy coats shone in the sun, were hitched to the two-seated carriage, and the family drove to church. William and Mary Ford were Episcopalians, and Henry was reared in that faith, although both then and later he showed little enthusiasm for church-going. Sitting through the long service in the stuffy little church, uncomfortably conscious of his Sunday best garments, sternly forbidden to fidget, while outside were all the sights and sounds of a country spring, must have seemed a wanton waste of time to small Henry. To this day he has not greatly changed that opinion. "Religion, like everything else, is a thing that should be kept working," he says. "I see no use in spending a great deal of time learning about heaven and hell. In my opinion, a man makes his own heaven and hell, and carries it around with him. Both of them are states of mind." On this particular Sunday morning, Henry was more than usually rebellious. It was the first week he had been allowed to leave off his shoes and stockings for the summer, and Henry had all a country boy's ardor for going barefoot. To cramp his joyously liberated toes again into stuffy leather shoes seemed to him an outrage. He resented his white collar, too, and the immaculate little suit his mother cautioned him to keep clean. He was not sullen about it. He merely remarked frankly that he hated their old Sunday anyhow and wished never to see another. Mother and father and the four children set out for church as usual. At the hitching posts, where William Ford tied the horses before going into the church, they met their neighbors, the Bennets. Will Bennett, a youngster about Henry's age, hailed him from the other carriage. "Hi, Hen, come here. I got something you ain't got." Henry scrambled out over the wheel and hurried to see what it might be. It was a watch, a real watch, as large and shiny as his father's. Henry looked at it with awed admiration and then with envy. It was Will's own watch. His grandfather had given it to him. On a strict cross-your-heart promise to give it back, Henry was allowed to take it in his hands. Then he cheered up somewhat. "That ain't much," he scornfully remarked. "It ain't running." At the same moment, a dazzling idea occurred to him. He had always wanted to see the insides of a watch. "I bet I can fix it for you," he declared. A few minutes later, when Mary Ford looked for Henry, he was nowhere to be found. Will was also missing. When, after services, they had not appeared, the parents became worried. They searched. Inquiries and explorations failed to reveal the boys. They were in the Bennett's farm shop, busy with the watch. Having no screwdriver small enough, Henry made one by filing a shingle nail. Then he set to work and took out every screw in the mechanism. The works came out of the case, to the accompaniment of an agonized protest from Will. The cogs fell apart, the springs unwound. Altogether it was a beautiful disorder, enough to delight any small boy. "Now look what you've went and done," cried Will, torn between natural emotion over the disaster to his watch and admiration of Henry's daring. "Well, you said you was going to put it together," he reminded that experimenter many times in the next few hours. Dinner time came, and Will, recalling the fried chicken, dumplings, puddings, cakes of the Sunday dinner, grew more than restless, but Henry held him there by the sheer force of his enthusiasm. The afternoon wore along, and he was still investigating those fascinating gears and springs. When at last outraged parental authority descended upon the boys, Henry's Sunday clothes were a wreck. His hands and face were grimy, but he had correctly replaced most of the screws, and he passionately declared that if they would only leave him alone, he would have the watch running in no time. Family discipline was strict in those days. Undoubtedly, Henry was punished, but he does not recall that now. What he does remember vividly is the passion for investigating clocks and watches that followed. In a few months, he had taken apart and put together every timepiece on the place, excepting only his father's watch. "Every clock in the house shuddered when it saw me coming," he says. But the knowledge he acquired was more than useful to him later, when at 16 he faced the problem of making his own living in Detroit. In those days, farm life had no great appeal for him. There were plenty of chores to be done by an active boy of 12 on that farm, where every bit of energy was put to some useful purpose. He drove up the cows at night, kept the kitchen wood box filled, helped to hitch and unhitch the horses, learned to milk, and chopped kindling. He recalls that his principal objection to such work was that it was always interrupting some interesting occupation he had discovered for himself in the shop. He liked to handle tools, to make something. The chores were an endless repetition of the same task, with no concrete object created. In the winter he went to the district school, walking 2 miles and back every day through the snow, and enjoying it. He did not care for school especially, although he got fair marks in his studies, and was given to helping other boys get their problems. Arithmetic was easy for him. His mind was already developing its mechanical trend. "I always stood well with the teacher," he says with a twinkle. "I found things ran more smoothly that way." He was not the boy to create unnecessary friction in his human relations, finding it as wasteful of energy there as it would have been in any of the mechanical contrivances he made. He got along pretty well with everyone until the time came to fight, and then he fought, hard and quick. Under his leadership, for he was popular with the other boys, the Greenfield School saw strange things done. Henry liked to play as well as any boy, but somehow in his thrifty ancestry there had been developed a strong desire to have something to show for time spent. Swimming, skating, and the like were all very well until he had thoroughly learned them, but why keep on after that? Henry wanted to do something else then, and as for spending a whole afternoon batting a ball around, that seemed to him a foolish occupation. Accordingly, he constructed a working forge in the schoolyard, and he and his crowd spent every recess and noon during one autumn working at it. There, with the aid of a blowpipe, they melted every bottle and bit of broken glass they could find and recast them into strange shapes. It was Henry, too, who devised the plan of damming the creek that ran near the schoolhouse, and by organizing the other boys into regular gangs, with a sub-foreman for each, accomplished the task so thoroughly and quickly that he had flooded 2 acres of potatoes before an outraged farmer knew what was happening. But these occupations, absorbing enough for the time being, did not fill his imagination. Henry already dreamed of bigger things. He meant someday to be a locomotive engineer. When he saw the big black engines roaring across the Michigan farmlands under their plumes of smoke, and when he caught a glimpse of the sooty man in overalls at the throttle, he felt an ambitious longing. Someday. It was on the whole a busy, happy childhood, spent for the most part out of doors. Henry grew freckled, sunburned the skin from his nose and neck in the swimming pool, scratched his bare legs on blackberry briars. He learned how to drive horses, how to handle a hay fork or a hoe, how to sharpen and repair the farm tools. The shop was the most interesting part of the farm to him. It was there he invented and manufactured a device for opening and closing the farm gates without getting down from the wagon. Then, when he was 14, an event occurred which undoubtedly changed the course of his life. Mary Ford died. End of chapter 2.